All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. For this Friday, I'm Pat Kreitlow up here on Lake Wissota in beautiful Chippewa County. And Aaron Sommers is down in Madison at the global headquarters of Civic Media. If you want to learn more about Civic Media, the radio stations, the shows, go to civicmedia.us. There's a page there, Aaron, for every show. There's something there for every station. And yet I fear you're getting short shrift. I don't believe we have a page dedicated to the producers, the essential employees who make all this happen.
You know, I feel like we were going to add a staff directory to the website. I know we ended up, like, we had a photographer come in and take pictures of everybody for that. I guess it just hasn't happened yet.
You had a photographer come in and take pictures?
Yeah, that was a while ago, probably a month and a half, maybe.
Okay. Well, I did talk to you earlier this week. I'm thinking of maybe starting a newsletter just for the radio show. And I think since you put together the bulk of the musical segments for this, that, you know, maybe once a week or so, you want to share some of these little musical tidbits that you educate me on throughout the course of the show.
Yeah, I think that'd be fun. We could get a nice place to collect the biggest hits of the week, I guess, for people who might not have had a chance to listen to the show every day.
I asked Carolyn Fiddler in the last segment if she'd ever fronted a band. You're the one that actually has music history, music experience. I don't know if you've ever told me if you're in a band. Are you ever wearing a t-shirt with concert dates on the back of some tour that you took or anything like that?
Not a tour that I took. No, I haven't been in a band that's actually like done anything. I've been in a couple, I guess, bands with my friends that we kind of just messed around, played some music, but one that was particularly interesting, somebody I didn't actually know in high school contacted me and was like, "Hey, you play drums. Do you want to be in a band? Play some punk music?" I was like, "Sure." So we met up at a coffee shop, started talking about stuff. And then this individual was talking about like making a scene in Manitowoc and like what we'll do after our first album and like how we'll figure out our fans and stuff. And I'm like, "Dude, I don't even know if you can play the guitar yet." And believe it or not, we didn't even rehearse once.
I was going to say, so he was kind of putting the cart before the horse, all about the publicity and not whether there was any actual talent or ability there.
Yeah.
Which I guess sounds a lot when you think about it, like politics or radio shows or anything like that. Some people get a little ahead of themselves, but again, I think this is something we can work on. I don't put away your drum set just yet. Keep chasing that dream.
Oh yeah. And I think we'll get Carolyn eventually.
There may be a Civic Media Orchestra in all of this yet. Coming up this hour, Mark Jacob joins us, a former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Chicago Sun-Times, who is rather prolific on social media about the coverage and sometimes the pitfalls in coverage of national media on the week's events. And so we'll look at some of that. And UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director Dan Schumacher joins us from just up the river from here and tells us a bit about, you know, what's happening in the WIAC and in Wisconsin college sports. And we'll talk about pro sports coming up this weekend as well, including a little team called the Green Bay Packers who have to win or go home this coming Sunday night when they take on the Detroit Lions. The phone lines are going to be open for our next segment only. Where we're just going to continue to talk about January 6th and some of the other news of the day. And then, as I said, we have Mark Jacob at 7:30 and Dan Schumacher at 7:50. So if you want to share your two cents on January 6th and, you know, what needs to happen from here, this would be the time to hop on the phones during the next commercial break at 844-967-2789 or the line up north is 715-388-7155. Our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. If you have a comment you just want me to pass along and share. And of course, we're monitoring comments on the Up North News Facebook page where you can watch what we do live. You just go to Facebook and search for Up North News WI. One of the things we'll probably start the next segment talking about, but I'll share a little bit of it here that Aaron just brought to my attention, is a newly published article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel by Lawrence Andrea, talking to Congressman-elect Derek Van Orden, who expresses some regret about his appearance on the U.S. Capitol grounds on January 6th. We refer to him as a congressman-elect because he is still not actually a congressman. He has still not been sworn into office. Nobody has in the House of Representatives because there is no House yet. The first order of business is to organize, which begins by the majority party electing a speaker. They haven't done that yet after, 11 ballots, something like that. And they will just continue that this morning, allegedly, until we see if Kevin McCarthy can finally get in or out. And then they'll swear in people like Derek Van Orden, who talks a bit about his presence, his decision to go to the U.S. Capitol. Well, in his mind, he was going there for Donald Trump's, quote unquote, Stop the Steal rally, which did nothing more than further the big lie, further the misinformation about the conduct and the results of the 2020 election. But we'll share a little bit of what he had to say about that and see if his veneer of bipartisanship is thin or if it rings true. So we'll examine that. We'll hear from you if you've got anything to say to give us a call on the phones. And then again later, Mark Jacob and Dan Schumacher all coming up before we wrap up the week here on Up North News Radio. We'll be right back. If you ever hear me playing one of my favorite tunes from Huey Lewis in the News, it means that either the weekend is coming or I've got some extended time off, which is also true. Or in this case, it also means Congress is still not working, still has taken more than a couple of days off before getting down to business, which is why Derek Van Orden is still not sworn in as a congressman for Western Wisconsin's 3rd District. But in an article published this morning by Lawrence Andrea at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, he does expressed some regret about his presence outside the U.S. Capitol building 2 years ago today. Now, Van Orden told the Journal Sentinel he does not regret supporting former President Donald Trump's false claims about the 2020 election. Van Orden, like many others, continues to frame them as election integrity concerns, even though there never has been and never will be any evidence of actual integrity irregularities. But Van Orden does suggest that he wishes he did not attend the Trump rally that preceded the deadly attack on the Capitol, if it would have prevented the public from believing that he embraced the violence. He says, if you look in hindsight, like the volume of stuff, the way that it could be interpreted that I would support political violence, that is regretful. If that made people think that I support political violence, this is a regret because I don't support political violence. That may be the case, Aaron, but
this is just like the most wet noodle argument I've ever heard, where he's just, I have some regrets. I shouldn't have done that. Not because I disagree with it. Not because of anything involved with me. Only because me being there kind of makes it look like I was associated. But only if it might have made people not think that. Then I could see myself regretting it.
I think I'm gonna. It was a lot like in the last hour we talked about a woman being sentenced to just 20 days for going into the Capitol that day as part of the mob. And it just, again, she's told the judge she just got caught up in the moment. And the judge rightfully asked, well, how do we know you're not going to get caught up in the moment again? And I think that is a very valid question for Derek Van Orden and others who, you say now that you have some regrets, but that you don't regret casting doubt on democracy, on the way that the 2020 election was conducted. Because you did it based on nothing. You did it because Donald Trump said so. And so you were going to follow along blindly rather than say, I wonder if there's any evidence that he's got that I should know about. I mean, I would like to think, look, we're all human. We all are fallible, but I would like to think that before I follow somebody blindly down a path that is relying upon an extreme claim, that the first thing I would do would be to say, is that true? I'm going to look into that. I can't tell you how many things we have not talked about on this radio show or that we have not written up for Up North News, because the first thing we did was to look into it and see if what was being thrown around social media was actually true. And it's not sometimes that it wasn't true, but that it wasn't verifiable. And there's nothing wrong with holding your tongue until you can verify something. And that to me is what Van Orden or anybody at that rally 2 years ago today should have done, is not blindly believed Donald Trump's claim without saying, I wonder if it's true. It comes back to what we said about Trump and his taxes. That again, why are you supporting somebody who refuses to come clean on their personal finances? And now we learn all these years later that he is indeed a tax cheat. He is indeed a tax fraud. He does stiff you and me, who have to make up the difference in taxes that he doesn't pay. If you had known that back then, wouldn't you have thought twice about supporting him? Well, the same can be said about the 2020 election. Now, back to the story on Van Orden. He maintains that he never entered the Capitol on January 6th. He says he left the area before the violence began. He tweeted that he condemned all forms of political violence while the rioters were in the building. But still, there is a photograph of Van Orden on a wall near the Capitol in an area that was behind police barricades. And so, you know, as a result, questions have been raised about whether his presence there was more than what he says that it is. And he may not like that kind of speculation, but it's going to be there because of the hundreds of people that are still being investigated. They're still looking at surveillance footage and photographs and things like that. And that's where those questions about not just the attendees, but the planners are going to continue on and on until we get some better answers. And it's not just radio hosts and politicians that are looking for that. It's people who truly stand for election integrity, truly stand for voter integrity, like Matt Rothschild from Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, who joins us now and who wrote an essay this week about the continuing quest for justice against those who took part in the deadly events of January 6th and leading up to that, like the fake elector scheme, in some way, shape, or form. Matt Rothschild, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Morning, Pat. Thanks for inviting me on again. It's always nice to be on.
Yeah, I appreciate it on short notice, because I did just see the column that you wrote up. And look, it does make the case that we don't know, we're not going to get to know right away everything that Merrick Garland and the U.S. Department of Justice may be working on, or Josh Call and the Wisconsin Department of Justice, or the Dane County District Attorney. And I think the point of your column was, these guys are professionals, they have to do an investigation, but these are my words, not yours. Tick, 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 tick. Let's go, guys.
Yeah, what's taking so long? You know, it's been 2 years today since the January 6th insurrection plot to overthrow our government, this criminal conspiracy that started at the very top with Donald Trump. But there were co-conspirators here in Wisconsin that haven't been prosecuted yet. And the question is, why not? Those 10 false electors were participating in a fraudulent exercise to deprive Wisconsin voters of their votes. And then we have Senator Ron Johnson, who is telling the Wisconsin legislature just to disregard the votes and declare Trump the winner. We have Ron Johnson, who was trying to hand false electors to Vice President Pence just minutes before the beginning of the Electoral College on January 6th, 2 years ago. I mean, 2 years is a long time. When someone robs a bank and there's footage of the person robbing the bank, they don't wait 2 years to arrest the person who's been robbing the bank. And so what's taken so long? If I'm a prosecutor, if I'm Josh Call, why haven't I brought charges? Or Ishmael Lozon, who's the DA in Dane County, that's where these false elector crimes were committed. Why is he sitting on his hands? I mean, it's very frustrating for those of us who want to see accountability for the crimes committed in this criminal conspiracy on January 6th. It's frustrating about Merrick Garland waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's frustrating here in Wisconsin. I mean, no one should be able to get away with what these folks got away with so far anyway on January 6th.
Right, because we've learned so much since then. I think a lot of people took it at face value that it was a just-in-case kind of deal, that we're putting our name on these fraudulent elector certificates, you know, in case there's any actual fraud discovered in, you know, the win by Joe Biden in Wisconsin. But this was concocted before the election, before there was any evidence. It had intent. And we know that the attorney general, for example, in the state of Michigan has an investigation going on here.
But you always have to be prepared to commit counter fraud.
maybe that's what it is. I don't know, Matt. Again, it's not that, you know, nothing is happening in Wisconsin, but we just don't really know the way that we do in Michigan.
No, and, you know, if the Michigan Attorney General can investigate these folks, why can't Josh Call? And I know the great new progressive law firm Law Forward has been begging prosecutors in Wisconsin, including Ishmael Lozon and Josh Call, to get off the dime on this thing. It's just, you know, 2 years since this horrible assault on our democracy occurred with Wisconsin people, including Ron Johnson and the false electors involved in it, and no one has been charged yet. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me.
And we continue learning, as we did just days ago, that the January 6th committee released more transcripts from depositions. And we know that Andrew Hitt, who was chair of the state Republican Party and one of the false electors, sent a text confirming that Johnson had contacted him back on December 7th of 2020. And that that Hitt's text message said, "Ron called me and now is arguing for us to have the legislature choose the electors, OMG. The OMG is basically a confession that this top state Republican official knew that this Republican U.S. senator was seeking something that was anti-democratic at least and illegal at worst.
Yeah, and it's not the first time that Andrew Hitt, you know, raised his eyebrows about what was about the scheme that he himself was involved in. There were other messages that he had revealed to the January 6th committee prior, which said, these crazy folks in Trump world, you know, want us to deliver this slate of electors to them. And so he was involved, but not, he didn't think it was a great idea to be, you know, driving the person who's going to rob the bank to the bank, but he was there driving the car. I mean, it's just, that's Andrew Hitt, but his evidence on Ron Johnson is really damning. And again, are we going to let anybody, whether it's a U.S. senator or whether it's 10 imposters, try in a conspiracy to deprive people of Wisconsin of their right to vote? Are they just going to be able to get away with that? I mean, what message does that send to people who want to screw with our election next time around?
Well, here's what it says. It says one among those 10 false electors is Bob Spindell. And correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, Bob Spindell still sits on the Wisconsin Elections Commission.
Yeah, this is just unbelievable. Robert Spindell, Bob Spindell, Republican hack, has been on the Wisconsin Elections Commission, appointed by Devin Lemieux and reappointed by Devin Lemieux, even though he's one of the false electors. And when Law Forward brought a complaint to the Wisconsin Elections Commission about the false electors, including Bob Spindell, Bob Bob Spindell didn't even recuse himself and voted not to investigate Bob Spindell. I mean, that's nice if you can get away with doing that with that conflict of interest and have no pride or shame, but that's who Bob Spindell is.
Well, and again, that was back, that vote was taken when the Elections Commission kind of took people at their word that it was a contingency thing, not something that had actually been a conspiracy to, you know, plot this, thing that I think I and many think is a crime. Matt Rothschild from the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, thanks so much for your insight on short notice. Sure appreciate it.
My pleasure, Pat. Have a nice weekend.
All right. Yep, you too. Happy New Year. And we will be back with Mark Jacob to talk more about this week's events and press coverage of them after this. You're up north.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Boy, I had to go way back in the archives for that one here. Alexander O'Neill. In case you're saying, wait, I know that. Who is that? That was apparently a one-hit wonder there. But we'll get to George Santos in just a moment. First, we're going to talk to Mark Jacob, a former editor at the Chicago Sun-Times and the Chicago Tribune. And I mean, we know what the 1-2 punch of big stories this week has been. Congress being gridlocked over a choice for speaker and this 2-year anniversary of the January 6th insurrection. So we'll get into that amongst other things. But Mark, how are you? Happy New Year to you.
Doing great. Happy New Year to you too, Pat.
I think that your observation this week was best about the solution to this race for Speaker of the House should be George Santos. I mean,
perfect Republican. I mean, can you name a better Republican, Republican who most exemplifies what the Republican Party has become in modern times? I don't think so. I mean, you know, lie, you know, I mean, someone who lies as easily as most of us breathe is, and the fact that it also, the thing about the Santos thing that's just so exemplary of what's going on is that they find this guy just lying about everything, lying about his mother's death, lying about you name it. And the leadership of the Republican Party has nothing to say about it. I mean, it's like, well, this is normal. Don't remind us about this. We have other things to talk about. We're going to talk about Hunter Biden's laptop looking like today. You know, the utter moral bankruptcy of today's Republican Party is just blows me away. I mean, it's, you know, here I am, son of Goldwater supporters, raised in a Republican household. And I'm not saying the Republican Party had problems back in the 60s and too. I'm not saying that, although they signed on to, you know, voting rights and civil rights legislation with the Democrats back in the 60s. I mean, but the Republican Party today, I mean, it's sad. It's sad. And I wish it wasn't that way. It's not like I'm saying, oh, I'm glad the Republican Party is terrible so that I can criticize them. Mm-hmm. No, I wish they would like wake up and stop being so terrible that's my wish for the new year is that they'll wake up and stop being so terrible.
And it's not as if they did not know that some people had misgivings. As you and others have pointed out, the holes in George Santos's resume, to put it charitably, were actually discovered by a tiny local newspaper, but it was a case of, you know, not enough people either saw it or believed it or spread it or what have you. So, I mean, the signs were there, and they were there because of local journalism.
Yeah, but there's less local journalism. That's the thing. I mean, that's the frustrating thing is that the local outlet got it, but nobody really picked it up. What my initial thought when the Santos thing came out and the New York Times, you know, broke it, but the New York Times broke it certainly belatedly, was that I wonder if there's some culture issue in the New York Times newsroom where where if you're, you know, covering the big news, you know, Ukraine or you're in Washington, that's where, you know, all the status is. And the people who are doing local news in New York, and this was a local story for New York, and the New York Times got embarrassed by failing to cover a local story, and that the local desk at the New York Times is just kind of the backwater and doesn't get enough credit. When the thing about it, Pat, you know, and I was like Metro editor at the Chicago Tribune, so I was dealing with local news, and the local news is the bedrock of most news organizations. It's why people subscribe. And especially in the New York area, that's why they would subscribe. So it was a big failure. It was a failure for a lot of places. The Democrats could have certainly done better at exposing it. If they knew it, they didn't. You know, this is a thing called Oppo Research, mm-hmm. you know, where political organizations, they investigate their opponents. And the thing about that also is that political organizations investigate themselves because they don't want to get surprised by the Oppo Research by the other side. So the Republicans had every obligation to investigate George Santos. And maybe they did. I don't know. Maybe if they did, they maybe kept it quiet. The real question with Santos to me is the guy's working in a call center, and about a year or two later, he's giving himself a $700,000 donation to his own campaign. I mean, that is fishy. And I wonder whether Santos is going to end up, you know, in federal court rather than in Congress at some point.
I could completely see that, especially as, you know, people are still following the money, if you will, to, you know, to Russian oligarchs and, right. and things like that. So as I've said a couple of times this morning about January 6th, just because it's been 2 years, doesn't mean the investigations or anything else are going away. Yeah, the January 6th committee went away, but we're going to keep hearing more about, you know, fraud and criminal material for some time to come. And it's going to happen to probably Congressman-elect Santos as well.
Well, you know, Pat, the thing about that is about the money and this secret money in American politics is that it's obvious that some secret money has come from foreign sources into the Republican Party, especially. And I think one of the big historical questions will be, where did Trump get his money? Why did Deutsche Bank give him money when nobody else would? And the answer, I think, has got to be that there was some guarantee of his loans by some foreign source. And, you know, Russian oligarchs is the best guess of mine, although he certainly has been cozying up the Saudis, too. I'm just saying that foreign influence in American elections going all the way to, you know, up to the top to Trump in the Republican Party is something that ultimately I bet we learn, but it should alarm every American.
Oh, very much. And I truly thought it was going to happen long ago because I remember following the FIFA scandal. FIFA is the world governing body of soccer. And they I'm sure a lot of folks have long since forgotten that in 2014, an immense financial scandal was found involving all manner of bribery and everything else. And it was a couple of international financial journalists who essentially broke the story. And that gave me probably too deep of a sense of faith that, again, financial journalists were going to finally, you know, figure out where Trump's money was coming from and others. And it still hasn't truly happened yet, which is not to say that that reporting isn't going on even as we speak. But I have to admit, I really thought we would learn more by now. But like you just said, we are going to continue learning.
Well, and the thing about it is that journalists don't have subpoena power. Journalists mm-hmm. cannot like charge into somebody's office and demand their records unless it's the government. And even then they obstruct. But so that's the thing that makes it hard for some giant financial crime and conspiracy like this to get found out by journalists, is that they just have very limited access to the records that they would prove it. But that doesn't mean the government, which does have subpoena power, shouldn't be trying a lot harder to demand that Deutsche Bank explain how the hell they gave Trump all that money in a loan. You know, and some of those loans were forgiven and stuff. So it's like, it's pretty much, I mean, I hate to say it, and I can't prove it, But it's pretty clear that Donald Trump was bought by foreign interests, that he was, that he was, has been bribed. And the thing about that, after you bribe somebody like that, then you can, you can compromise them by blackmailing. I mean, it's a, it's a bribe, then it's a blackmail, because if the, if you bribe them, then you, if you can threaten to reveal the bribe. Mm-hmm. And so then you got them. And when you look at Donald Trump's behavior toward Russia, there's no other rational explanation for what's happened other than the idea that that he's somehow in the pocket of Russia. Mm-hmm. And Vladimir Putin and his allies. There's nothing else that makes any sense. You can't explain Helsinki without that. Why did the U.S. president humiliate himself on the international stage like that? Why does he say nothing bad about the one of the worst characters in global politics? And it's obvious. It's just, I challenge somebody to give me another explanation that makes any sense other than the fact that he has been working with Russian oligarchs for many years. They've been giving him money and he's got to shut up about it.
Well, it's, as I said, when the Trump taxes were finally released, I said, I have so many I told you so's pent up inside of me. Right. And they're just going to continue to spew out as these things come up. The vote for House Speaker, of course, continues to drag on. But you and I both agreed there hasn't been a lot of terrible coverage of the vote for Speaker, the race for Speaker, simply because this is right in the bailiwick of many national media outlets. This is horse race coverage.
Yeah. That's the thing, that they love this, because then they can, you know, they can put the little tote board on the screen about, you know, who's doing, you know, who's leading, who's got this. And it doesn't have to get into that messy thing about issues and about, you know, getting health care to people and stuff and education and all these boring issues. The news media would much rather deal with, like, with the conflict of politics and who gets the votes and who's this, who's up, who's down, as if, you know, Pat, as if anybody, you know, that's just struggling to keep a job and to feed their family and to maybe figure out how to get their kid into college gives a crap about whether Kevin McCarthy is Speaker of the House. They just don't care. They would rather, what they do care about is Congress doing something to help them. And that's not getting done. But so I'm not, it's certainly a big news story, but you're right that it's, that the whole, what's going on now on the floor is just, you know, that's this personalities and conflict driven journalism that the mainstream media loves. They haven't done a bad job of it. You know, the thing that I kind of worry about more in the next 2 years with just a giant clown show in the U.S. House of Representatives, because it's run by people who don't care about the country, they just care about themselves, is that the mainstream media will take it too seriously. And it's got to take it a little seriously because it's the U.S. House of Representatives, but they don't have to confer all this legitimacy and credibility on investigation of Hunter's laptop, or they're even talking about investigating past impeachments. So they're going to, like, crack open the Ukraine impeachment and explain why, well, there was nothing to it when obviously there was something to it. And so they're going to, like, go back, you know, look backward at all this stuff that didn't matter and, you know, invent all these conspiracies and give legitimacy to it. And if the mainstream news media goes along with them and acts like that's a real rational thing, then it's going to be a big, big problem. And we'll have to see. Obviously, nobody's been sworn in the U.S. House of Representatives yet. So, you know, who knows what they'll do. But what my view is that, you know, what we've seen in the last 3 days with just complete dysfunction and Republican backbiting in the U.S. House is likely to get even worse. I think it's going to be like 2 years of just extreme embarrassment where you have, like, you know, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and Matt Gaetz. You're going to have the inmates in charge of the asylum, and it's going to be embarrassing for the country. But at this point, it's been so embarrassing that the news media has been perfectly willing to call it an embarrassment, which is accurate, and hasn't done anything terrible lately on the coverage. I'm just worried that they're going to, like, you know, get over this, and the Republicans are going to come up with just crazy ass stuff. And the news media is going to act like, well, that's just normal. That's fine. That's the way it is.
That's just it. It's the things that they will normalize once this is all done. Right. That should be concerning to a lot of news viewers. Mark Jacob, thanks so much. Glad to talk to you. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks here.
All right. Talk to you then.
All right. Have a great weekend. You know, the other thing about the issues is that they actually could talk issues this week just based on all the nominating speeches. You know, there's a lot of things in there. For example, you'd think Republicans are about nothing more than, you know, stop being Mexican and Central American refugees, because it comes up in every nominating speech, rather than what, you know, middle class Americans are trying to go through on a daily basis. So we'll continue to monitor. Dan Schumacher coming up next as we preview the weekend. You're up north. Let's head into the weekend with our friend Dan Schumacher and talk about some sports going on around Wisconsin this weekend. And I'm gonna take a kind of the long way of getting to local WIAC sports in, you know, wherever your hometown is in Wisconsin. But as you know, Dan, last week I was in Idaho visiting our older daughter and her boys, and we went to a hockey game for the Idaho Spud Kings, nice. Which is a tier three junior hockey thing in the US IHL or something like that. Mm-hmm. My point being, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the NHL. It wasn't the Olympic hockey team. It wasn't even Division I. These are players hoping to get noticed, you know, by Division I scouts at some point, but the place was rocking. I mean, the people of Idaho Falls come in and they just made it a great time. And so that's how I'm making my plug for whether it's your teams with the UW-Eau Claire Blue Golds or the Pointers or the Phoenix or, you know, anybody like that. I think people underestimate the opportunities they have to go see some local sports around Wisconsin.
No doubt about it, Pat. I mean, just local in Chippewa Falls, you've got the Chippewa Falls Steel, which is a juniors program, and they do very well attracting fans. It engages the community. Which is the most important part of the athletic part, is to engage your community. And you see it all over the states, especially the Midwest. Hockey's a big deal. But it isn't just hockey. It's basketball. It's football. All these sports, all they do is bring people together and create its own community, which in itself is a good thing. So, yeah, it's sports does bring people together, and it creates community. And I can't think of more positive things than that.
And in your role, you sometimes have to make the rounds when there are multiple things going on. And I mean, if I had the schedule ability, I would tail you to as many of those Blue Gold hockey games as you go to, yeah. Because Hobbs Ice Arena is always it's always a good time there as well.
And it will be Saturday tomorrow. We get to do some crossover. What I'm talking about crossover is that we won two national championships last year in men's track and field. We're going to pass out the championship rings in between the first period and the second period of the men's hockey game tomorrow night.
Nice.
So we're going to have a cross, you know, different fans at the hockey game that are usually there because of the passing out of the national championship rings. But I'll first be coming from women's basketball game at 5:00. So, yeah, it's usually a full slate each day, each weekend with mm-hmm. sports.
Yeah. There will also, of course, be things at a more professional level, shall we say, including the final week of the regular season. Dan, I would never have put money on the fact that the Lions-Packers game at the end of the regular season was going to stand for anything. And yet here it is, for one team goes on and one team goes home.
And I'll go a step further. I can't believe the NFL moved it to the primetime game in the evening.
I can't either. I really can't.
I mean, I don't know if too many people are happy about that. I mean, it's good for TV probably, but, you know, people would like to see the 3:25 game, you know, the 3:00 in the afternoon game. But the NFL and the network must think the game's pretty special for them to move it there.
It just seems to me you either have to put a nothing game there, because what you want to do, and I think baseball is now doing a better job of this as well, is you want all those final games that have any consequences all played at the same time, so that, you know, you don't know going into the game if you're in or out. You add some drama and excitement that way. And
right.
I can't imagine why the NFL wouldn't want that. And, you know, maybe not even have a Sunday night game at the end there, and, you know, give NBC, you know, an extra playoff game or something instead. So again, like you said, good for ratings, but not great for scheduling.
That's great for scheduling the fans. I don't, you know, it's a school night.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a school, Sunday night is a school night. You know, and I guarantee you the bars and the restaurants would prefer it to be at 3:30 than at 7:30.
Oh yeah.
At night. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. No doubt as well. You were telling me I was getting dizzy with all the numbers just going through in your case, all the blue gold rankings, all the various teams. These are national rankings that you get to brag about.
Yeah. I bragged a little too much, but
maybe a little bit,
maybe. But yeah, we've got a lot of great things going on, and the league is so strong. And when you are ranked in that top 10, and we have multiple programs currently in the top 10, you know, it's earned. It's earned. There's no doubt, because of the level of competition. And, you know, I'll give you a story. When I took over in 13, we had 13 kids on our wrestling program, and they wanted me to drop the program. And I said, no, let me take a look at it. I was a former wrestler in high school. And now we have 48 kids on the program, and we're ranked 8th in the country. So there's, you know, we've had some really good upside with a lot of our programs, and the WIAC just makes us better because of the competition. And again, we're influencing communities, because the WIAC is in a lot of parts of the communities of this state.
Mm-hmm. We professionally have the Bucks at home tonight against the Hornets. Badger men's basketball team is at Illinois tomorrow. Badger women host the Gophers on Sunday afternoon. Marquette men's basketball hosts Georgetown tomorrow afternoon. And then there's your Bears. Do they even let the Bears play anymore?
Justin Fields is not playing this week, so the Vikings are going to get let off the hook. So, but I don't know how much. I mean, the Vikings really don't have anything to play for. I mean,
right.
I think their seed and their place in the playoffs is pretty much locked up. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if Cousins doesn't play.
No, I wouldn't be either, because again, you're looking to avoid injuries, and especially with Fields, because he's pretty much all Chicago has at that point.
The Bears don't mind losing, because it just gives them a better chance for the number two pick in the draft.
And now there's talk that the AFC games, because they're not going to make up the Bills Bengals one with the terrible injury, but that there may be a neutral site AFC championship game. The NFL is going to consider that, and things could get to be a real mess. And I get that this is a tragedy, the injury that happened to the Bills players, but boy, it has really thrown a wrench into the works here.
I don't understand where that line of thinking of going to a neutral site. Why want? I don't know if that's going to make it any better, the situation any better. I mean, other than that, I don't know. I don't understand the rationale on that, to going to a neutral site. Keep things, try to get back things back to normal.
Yes. But, you know, again, back to the human element of it, because you were a football player yourself. You've taken some heavy hits, and understand just how thankful everybody is that things have turned out the way that they have.
Yes. Yes. I heard some really good reports last night on the 9 o'clock news regarding him. And I thought the best sign was that he was writing and asking questions. He still had on a ventilator, but he was awake, coherent, and he was able to write and ask questions. So if his neurological part is working and being able to do that, and the motor skills, that's a really good sign.
And having that improvement from DeMar Hamlin, is really racked up to instant action with CPR and having folks nearby, having an AED in the area. And so to the degree that helps more people get training for their staff or their colleagues or whatever, and get the equipment on hand, I think that can only be a good thing for all of us. Dan Schumacher, thanks so much. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
You betcha. Good luck.
All right. Thanks, Dan. Talk to you a little bit later on. That'll do it. Live shows again resume on January 16th. Enjoy the rest of your Friday. Have a great weekend.